हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषाहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So one should not find fault in the previous sins of the Vaishnava, nor the sins which have disappeared, or are about to disappear, nor should he find fault in the accidental commission of sin. Then from Upadeshamrita, one should not see the devotee from the material point of view. Upadeshamrita verse 6. The householder should perform only activities leading to the spiritual goal, and not involve himself in the sinful activities of the materialist. He should show appropriate compassion for all jivas. Considering himself fallen, he should give proper respect to all others, not demanding respect from others. The household being unattached to family life should blend it with things related to Krishna, accepting only what is necessary. He should practice relishing the chanting of the name. When the taste for Krishna becomes strong, and the taste of material enjoyment becomes completely destroyed, a natural sense of detachment will arise due to absence of material attachment. Such a state will not appear by endeavor alone. Right. So here we see is by the grace of the name, you know, that this is coming. And also it's leading up to the next point of the guru. So basically we see is here, by association of devotees we've come in contact. By association we develop faith. And by that association then all this means our devotional life then is cultivated. So here then, in that cultivation, then taking advantage of the direction of these personalities, then one is trying to perform those activities that are favorable. So now in this favorable, it means, you know, what is necessary. It says not more than necessary, right? Accepting only what is necessary. So each individual, what is necessary may be different. Someone it's more, someone it's less. But in any case, in other words, necessary means what to you is actually a necessity, right? It means the principle of it, that remains. But so much of the detail may not be so important. Right, we would always then work with something that is properly spiritual goal, not involve itself in sinful activities of the materialist. Materialist engages in activities that are not connected to Krishna. Right, the devotee engages in these activities that lead to a spiritual goal. Right, so one is that may change what kind of activities you're doing, or more importantly, it changes the nature of the activity. Does that make sense? So, I mean, in other words, you could read this both ways. Householders should perform only activities leading to the spiritual goal. So we could take that as only sadhana, you know, and preaching and like that. If that's all that's required, nice. Right? But if not, then the activity should be leading to the spiritual goal. In other words, his activity, he understands it in relationship to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Then you can apply it to your particular individual need. Otherwise, more difficult. Right? Not involved. Okay. So sinful activities of the materialist, we understand sin is defined as what is not connected to Krishna. Right? Also, then, of course, it's activities that are not recommended by Shastra. Those things that should be given up. Right? But even activities that we could say are proper activities, nice activities, if they're not connected to Krishna, they're materialist. Right? There are plenty of materialists that are nice people, right? In the way of that they kind to others, like to give in charity, like to do lots of social work, you know, care, and all these different things. So they're giving lots of money, putting in time, and all that. So generally you wouldn't call that sinful activities, right? But technically, because it's not connected to Krishna, therefore it's sinful. Does that make sense? So in other words, the activity is not connected to God, it's sinful. It's connected to God, it's pious. That's the whole point. So these means you can, in other words, this you can be read at all these varieties of levels, you know, depending upon what works. Shishoka, appropriate compassion for all jivas, right? So appropriate, depending upon their position, then they should be dealt with, right? So in other words, someone deserves compassion, but they are unable to take advantage of it. So therefore, one has to be careful how you show them compassion. Right? You don't show compassion to the dog and get your arm bit off. That's not the proper show of compassion. Right? It means it must be intelligent. So those who will appreciate, be able to take advantage of it, then those that is shown more directly. Those who are not, then you stay out of their way, and you just, the mood is, you adjust your own mood. Right? Does that make sense? Considering himself fallen, because we're in the material world, we're here, and so that's not a great situation. You would not call that ideal, right? Ideal means you're in, you know, in the spiritual world, in the Lord's pastimes. That way we consider it a bit more ideal, right? So what's going on here, we wouldn't consider that to be ideal, right? Does that make sense? So, because of that, then one considers oneself in a fallen position. And from that, then one can be, one's humble, considering self fallen, that means humility. Right? Giving proper respect to others, not demanding respect from others. Right? So that's what the Shikshastika is mentioning. That's your culture. Right? And showing appropriate compassion, then you're also, means you have to be tolerant. Right? So all these nice qualities that Lord Chaitanya mentions. Okay, being unattached to family life should blend it with things related to Krishna. In other words, unattached meaning the results of it. You call it attached when the results you want. Right? So, in other words, acting in the spirit of Naishkarmya, in the spirit of sacrifice, then you blend it with things related to Krishna. You connect it all with Krishna in some way or another. The more direct, the better. Like that. But even if it's less direct, it's connected. You know? But the more indirect it is, the more it will have other elements involved. So there'll always be some little thing that doesn't quite go ideally for you. But the point is that it won't go ideally materially. But spiritually, it's developing. It's progressive. Does that make sense? You know, unless there's an offensive element to it, then that's more of a problem. Right? And that would be a bit of a problem. So one is always very careful about that. That's why it says offenses must be avoided. Right? Because offenses are what's going to cause the problem. Not, does that make sense? Not material distraction. Right? That's just going to mean your devotion is not progressing very quickly or efficiently. But offenses will actually go against and destroy what you've developed. Does that make sense? If there's material attachment, it will slow down your advancement. If there's offenses, it will destroy whatever advancement you have. So that's why one has to be very, very careful. Right? Yes?
So if someone has material attachment, they cannot be connected to Krishna whatsoever. Is it better to regulate those attachments? That way it's just an attachment, it doesn't become offensive.
So when you say the consideration about regulation, you know, to control offenses, where do you get that concept?
Regulation to control, to regulate, say, like someone desires.
No, we understand that. I'm just saying the point is that you're working on the premise of those activities that can absolutely in no way, shape, or form be connected to Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you're proposing that then they're regulated so that they're, because to stop them may create a mood of offensiveness.
Yeah.
So this idea of judging something as not properly connected to Krishna, that there is the process of regulation and that you want to avoid offense, where did you get that? You know what I'm saying? You saw it on a soapy on Saturday afternoon.
No, I mean, I would think in my heart, if you cannot connect it, cut it out.
Okay, but my point is where did you get that concept? Why would you be doing that?
It's probably because of...
If you're walking down the street, you know, in London, and you're not a devotee, is this how you would think to deal with, you know, attachments that aren't so useful? Huh? Yes or no? If one wasn't a devotee and you were just walking down the street in London, would this be your approach to activities that you felt were not useful? To regulate them, to avoid offenses and all that? No, that's avoiding conflict, but see, where did this idea that you should regulate your life come from? Is it a natural part of your culture?
A military culture.
Yeah, is it?
It depends on your upbringing. Even if
that's there, you know, but we're not talking here landed gentry.
Okay, so it comes from...
Where would you get
it? Krishna.
Yes, okay. So now, how are you saying that there is an activity that absolutely can't be connected to Krishna? Because you've just managed to find a way to very indirectly connect it. That's my point. That's my point. Is that you didn't get this. This isn't something that, you know, people use, you know. Like that. There may have been that concept before, but that's, you know, disappeared a long time ago. You can read about it, you know, in the old novels and stuff. But the point is that regulation is the first start of anything. Whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, regulation is the method that you deal with it. Because as soon as something gets regulated, it loses the excitement. Right? And when you lose excitement, then what does that do? Yes, it starts to control attachment. In other words, when the excitement is great, right? Because from excitement, you get attachment, right? So if you reduce excitement, you reduce attachment, right? So that's the whole idea. Is by regulation, that's exactly where something becomes uninteresting or less interesting, right? So by regulating it, then it's no big deal. The idea is I could do this anytime I like. You can't. But you think like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You think, I'll go out to the nightclub anytime I like. You can't go out to the nightclub at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's why it's called nightclub, not, you know, morning club. Right? That if you want to play squash, that's the morning club. Right? You know, does that make sense? So you're still, it's regulated anyway, whether you're actually going to get into the place that you do, so there has to be something that qualifies you to get in. Right? You just don't walk into these places. There's some big fat guy there with a little thing in his ear and a piece of paper and you somehow don't qualify. You don't get in. It doesn't matter, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, but the idea is I'm free. I can do whatever I like. No, you can't. You're regulated anyway. The point is either you voluntarily regulate yourself and then it's progressive, or you will be regulated. You know, which is less progressive, but is better than no regulation at all. Does that make sense? So the idea is by regulating it right there, that is already progressive. Because when you regulate it, then you actually start to think about its use. And then it's given up. You know what I'm saying? So that's just on that side, you know. So So you've already worked out what you are supposed to do. But on the other side, technically there's no such thing as something that can't be connected to Krishna. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of, it may not be connected on, means the more distant it gets, it means the more distant its connection. Something according to Dharma is very naturally and easily connectable. Right? Something with Artha, you know, it also can be connected, but it gets more distant. Kama gets even more distant. Right? But it's still connectable because the Kama is also, and Artha are in connection with Dharma. But when Kama and Artha are not connected with Dharma, then it gets farther away. But then still, there is an inherent science of Artha and Kama. Right, that's given by God. That can be followed. Though you're not following it based on the higher principles. You're following it just on the principles of the science itself. Right? In other words, we follow Ayurveda because then the health is proper so we can serve Krishna. So Ayurveda is not for us the main thing. It is a anga of our, you know, I mean it's an assistant to our devotional activities. Right? So that would be its natural state. But let us say someone is just totally fanatically into health. Then the medicine becomes their total world. So that's out of balance, that's not correct. But still, they can correct that situation by following all the rules on health, of the health science, as given by the science itself. You understand? So that's, even though that's not ideal, but at least you, it means in other words, if the bigger your perspective and the more proper the balance, the better. But if your perspective is very narrow, then within that you make the complete circle. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise it's that your circle is very big, so health is part of it. You know? But if all you can do is think health, then you make that the complete circle. But you're following the science, so then that's what is the pious element of it. And if you just do that for that, it regulated, it's pious, it's nice, but that's as good as it gets. But if you're following that method to please Krishna because you want to regulate this insanity that you have, this over-attachment, so you regulate it and deal with it according to the science that Krishna gives it, then that will start to, because you're doing it for Krishna, and you because you're doing it according to the science, right? Then that mood of detachment, even though one may not be detached, but that idea that I want to do this for Krishna and give up the results, right? That's your determination. Then you become freed from it. You know what I'm saying? You become freed from that attachment. Though it's going to be slower than if you're working on a bigger principle, right? Where it's more nicely balanced and connected. Because the more directly it's connected, the quicker is the purification and proper establishment in you know, the chanting and developing attachment to Krishna. The other is, you're not so much developing attachment to Krishna as much as you're developing detachment from the thing that keeps you from getting attached to Krishna. So even if you're doing that for Krishna, you know what I'm saying? In other words, always remember Krishna as the prominent element, and never forget him is what supports that. But if you're so distracted by the elements that make you forget Krishna, you make your determination to remember Krishna by avoiding working on those things that make you forget him. Right? And so when that's complete, then it will naturally purify where, since you were doing it to please Krishna and to be absorbed in Krishna, then you'll start to become absorbed in Krishna because that was your determination. Right? But this thing of attachment was distracting you from that. Therefore, it wasn't happening. Does that make sense? So it's, in other words, what's being asked here is a real personal maturity where one is actually taking responsibility to get it done. Because you can't fool Krishna. And you're not technically really going to fool yourself. You can try. You can definitely fool others. But there's a good chance you're not going to fool yourself, and you can never fool Krishna and the material energy. So when we take that position that this is what we want, if it's act sincere, then Krishna appreciates that, and then the results come. We develop that detachment and that attachment to Krishna. Right? In other words, developing detachment on its own is not very important. Developing detachment so that one can develop attachment for Krishna, that's one's purpose. that then becomes useful. Right? That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out here in this work. Is Lord Chaitanya's teaching is that if it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. If it's not connected, it's just not useful. Right? That's the only thing you can say. It's very important, but that's okay. It's not your importance. Right? I can have a very nice, you know, let's say, you know, wrench for, you know, tightening the lug nuts on, you know, a, you know, what do you call it? Let's say a rover or something. Okay? And it may be very valuable. It costs lots. It costs, you know, 400 pounds, right? And it's very valuable. And people who know about it would consider, wow, that's a nice wrench. But you don't have that car. You don't deal with it. So even though it's valuable, it's not valuable to you. So that's the whole thing, is to be able to distinguish between what's valuable and then what's valuable to you. Right? So then in doing that, then you understand is that I don't actually need this. That's why then you just deal with things that are only what is necessary. What actually is my attachment, that I got to deal with. Others have these attachments, they're all going for, I don't have that attachment, so therefore I don't have to do it. Now, everybody else is worried about, you know, some social element. I'm not worried about that, so therefore I don't have to endeavor about for it like others need to endeavor for it. You know, does that make sense? Like that. Okay. Something else. Okay. Accepting only what's necessary, he should practice relishing the chanting of the name. So only dealing, in other words, if you reduce down to all your activities to just what you actually need to do, you know, to address your attachments, then that leaves you more time for Krishna. So then you should practice relishing the chanting of the name. Right? Because if you have more things, you're dealing with things that are not necessary, where's the time for chanting? Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that since chanting is what you're trying to do, then you only accept what is necessary. Right? And that's the idea. So the always forget Krishna part, never forget Krishna part, is reduced down to as small as possible so you can spend the time always remembering Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Then when the taste for Krishna becomes strong and the taste for material enjoyment becomes completely destroyed, right, a natural sense of detachment will arise due to the absence of material attachment. Means, so because there is no material attachment, then that detachment, that sense of detachment will arise. You don't have attachment to anything, therefore one has nothing to gain in this world. Right? So that's, but we see that as being done by a taste for Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The higher means the lower is given up because of the higher. So it's not that I'm so expert at it and controlling the senses and avoiding this and that that's important. What's actually important is developing the taste for the holy name, because he put it together. Developing, relish, practice relishing the chanting of the holy name and accepting only what's necessary. So in other words, if you are getting a taste for the devotional process and connecting everything to Krishna, right, then, how do you say, then the attachment to these other things just naturally fades away. Right? So the focus, as we saw before, is not on becoming detached. The focus is on becoming attached to Krishna. Right? And so depending upon how much is our attachment to the material energy, to that degree we're going to be engaging those things in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Such a state will not appear by endeavor alone. Now he's opening up the next discussion. Means that state we will make the endeavor for. In other words, he's saying he should do this, he should do that, he should blend it, he should only deal with what's necessary, he should practice developing all that. But having said all that, then he says, such a state of coming to when there's a taste for Krishna's name and there's no taste for material endeavor, that state will not appear by one's endeavor alone. The endeavor is done, why it says endeavor alone, it doesn't say, will not appear by one's endeavor. But endeavor alone means endeavor must be there. And there must be, you know, the Lord's mercy. Does that make sense? Otherwise you say, oh, it won't come by endeavor, so I won't endeavor. No, it says endeavor alone. So that means the endeavor must be there, and then it will come. Right? It's not just by, you know, throwing vegetables in the pot and pushing them around that, you know, you come up with a fabulous sabji. Right? There's more to it than that. So in the same way as this process, there's more to it than just one's endeavor in the sadhana. Right? Okay? So then, now he goes into guru. For practice of both types of bhakti, well, it means the Vaidhi and the Raghunuga. The bona fide guru is necessary. The guru engages the candidate of Vaidhi Bhakti according to his inclinations. Right? Means according to inclinations means your conditioned nature, what things you're naturally attached to, what you value. So he's going to take those things and connect it to Krishna, right? The household of being unattached to family should blend it with things related to Krishna. So according to his inclinations, the spiritual master teaches you how to blend those things with Krishna. Right? That makes sense. So it's not one shoe fits all. Right? It means everybody, the principle that you're going to connect this to Krishna, that's everybody's following. But what exactly that inclination means, yes?
This is also actually very proper answer to the Ritviks. Diksha Guru must be the living guru who sees the inclination of the disciple.
Ah, yeah, that's a good point, because without seeing inclination, of course, you know, Prabhupada is omniscient, omnipotent, you know, sitting in his own sign in the cloud, like Krishna or something. But whatever, the point is he is able to see these things, yes. It's a good point. It's a personal relationship. He teaches what rules to observe and how to eliminate the obstacles. Right? Because what rules means there's going to be your generic rules, but there's going to be applications specifically that are work in your life. Right? So that may be either directly given, or he may teach you how to figure it out yourself. Okay? The guru shows the candidate of Raghunuga Bhakti how to cultivate suitable rasa corresponding to the disciple's natural taste. Right? Because otherwise is this taste and this rasa means there's particular things that make it that rasa. Otherwise you end up with something else, rasa bas. Does that make sense? So it's not just that you have that inclination that that's what makes it work. He still has to be cultivated, right? Because this idea that spontaneous means you just do whimsical or sporadic or... No. Spontaneous means it's coming from a natural inspiration, right? But still, there is a sadhana. That's why it's called Raghunuga sadhana bhakti. It's still a practice. This is missed. Sometimes it's thought that Raghunuga means it's not a practice. It's just whatever you like. No. It's a practice, but it's based on the inspiration is that desire to be involved in it, as opposed to the desire to properly follow the scriptures so that you get a good result. Yes?
So could we say that like the Vaidhi Bhakti is actually practice of detachment, and then the Raghunuga Bhakti would be more practice of attachment with profession?
You could say, you would see that, but because you'd be dealing with it, you don't have a natural inspiration, that means your natural inspiration is somewhere else. So then that element of detachment. But it can also be is just, you know, one is likes following rules, one can be inspired in that, you know, like that. So that would be a very positive, progressive, you know, Vaidhi Bhakti. So it's not necessarily, and the rag means the detachment will be there because you're doing it for someone else. But it's just, the main thing is just whether it's coming more spontaneously or whether it's more based on, you know, the proper following of the rules. That's all. It's very subtle. Many try to make it into the form of it makes the difference, but the form is actually secondary to the mood, as we've seen throughout this whole work. The attitude is actually the main thing. Then the form of it, you know, then as much as it is close to the ideal or the tradition, the better. And if it's not, then, you know, whatever can be done. you know, that will be, is that okay? There are two types of taste of greed, temporary and natural. Right? So now, because before we were saying that there's all these different elements. So now he's saying that one should have this greed. So now he's saying there's two types of this taste, greed, temporary and natural. Sometimes devotees hear about the qualities of Nanda or Subal, derive great bliss and sometimes show similar sentiments. But this bliss and the show of sentiments are short-lived. This is called temporary greed. Right? There is no use in such a show. It is necessary for the guru to carefully examine which rasa, dasya, shakya, vatsalya, or madhurya gives natural greed. Detecting one's natural sentiment, the guru will give teachings according to that mood. If this is not done, then the instructed mood will not be permanent due to the unsuitability of the disciple. It should be noted that not all seekers will be qualified for madhurya rasa. If guru finds it impossible for him to decide the rasa of the disciple, he will honestly admit his inability to the disciple and direct him to approach a suitable guru. The disciple has no alternative but to take shelter of the lotus feet of the bona fide guru. Okay. So here he's bringing out this thing of two types of greed, temporary and natural. So your temporary is you hear something and that's very nice, you develop that inspiration, but it will go away. So he says natural means based on one's natural inclination. Then cultivating that will be solid. Right? You could also, from what I can read here, is that even within something that's natural for one, is that there would be the temporary manifestation of it. You would hear, you'd be inspired, then when you're not hearing, you're thinking of something else. Right? So that would be there. So that's the element of in Smarana, that it's occasional. Right? I think we have it somewhere around here. What was in the back of? In the back of the Bhagavatam. Yeah, that had... I don't even know if that's in here. So is that there's these levels of, means it's mentioned, Nectar Devotion uses them, Patanjali uses them, they're just this. So in the beginning it's very occasionally something will be connected, then it's more regular, then it becomes more steady, and slowly it comes up to the point of samadhi. Okay? So one would be dealing with that element. But here, mainly he's saying the temporary would mean that it's not actually according to one's own natural tendency. Right? But you would have the element that it's more temporary in that it's the remembrance is not very great. But it may be the natural position, yes.
When the greed is not occasional, when it's all the time, is this nishtha or is that just dealing in when you're studying and it's
used? It could be both. It doesn't have to be this or that. But the main thing is that it's more fixed, so it becomes more prominent. That means your focus, your endeavor is more stable and steady. Doesn't mean it's totally, right? Because it's only totally stable at prema, right? But it's stable enough that people will think this person's stable.
Right? So intense greed comes at prema, like intense greed.
Well, intense greed, no, it can come before that because means. Depends on what you call intense, but it's already intensifying. It means at that point it's intensified to the point where one becomes stable. But it's not necessarily so much feelings or emotion are invoked. At ruchi, then a taste is there. So then that will be, it's more intense. Asakti, then attachment, that'll be more intense. So in bhava, when you come to the point of samadhi.
So bhava is when
there means it's not so. No. There's no distractions, but it's not. In other words, there's no forgetting of Krishna, but there may not be constant remembrance. Conditioned nature means the prominent element is forgetting Krishna, Right, so we have to introduce this, that we have to control the forgetting and encourage the remembering. On the transcendental platform, there's no forgetting Krishna. There's just not forgetting him because you're distracted by something that's mundane. It's just you're not remembering Krishna. But that means you're still being distracted by something. But you're being distracted by what's by spiritual.
So forgetting is mainly being distracted by the material and mundane things. And remembering is, so when you, if you can imagine a issue between the two, if there was a, where you, there's no more no forgetting, at that point all your activities are pretty much trying to be engaged.
They're all spiritual, but it's still, you have to be able to distinguish to make sure that that is progressive.
Yeah.
Because the point is when we hear, let's say we hear descriptions of Vrindavan and the beauty of Vrindavan, how is it described?
Through the qualities.
Yeah, okay, that's there. But in light of these philosophical points that we've been making, how is it described that makes it so it's not forgetting Krishna? Getting close.
There's a sweetness.
As a sweetness, but there's still something more. It's the simple point that makes the difference between pious and impious. Right. They're describing the beauty of Vrindavan, but they're describing it in such a way it's in the pastime, it's related to Krishna. You understand? But the point is Vrindavan is a beautiful place. So you could be appreciating its beauty, but not remembering Krishna. You understand? So if that becomes too prominent, then that means one is interested in just Krishna's energies without Krishna. Therefore, the attention turns to the material energy, and we come here. Right? In other words, one's on the spiritual platform, but one is not appreciating it in connection with Krishna, though it's spiritual. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So now that we've already made that mistake and we don't want to make that mistake again, coming to that platform, basically you're not going to make that mistake. But still, that inclination is there because of tatasta. Right? So then you're going to try to take up the activities, but all in connection to Krishna. So you're not going to get distracted by the other things. You'll be engaged in your spiritual activities, but you won't be distracted by them. Because remember, spiritual means not material. Bhakti means devotion. You know what I'm saying? So when we say spiritual, we mean the real spiritual is engaged in the Lord's service. You know, because we define everything connected to Krishna. So when we say spiritual, we mean that. But at the same time is, you can also have spiritual that's not connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Just like you can have material that's connected or not connected. Spiritually, you can have connected or not connected. Right? But in Goloka, it's always connected. But in Gokul, it can be connected or not.
So when we're still looking from the point of view where we're enamored by the energies and not connected to Krishna, then we're still seeing ourselves as the enjoyer, as the enjoyer.
As the enjoyer, yes.
Because it's only when we're connecting it to Krishna, for Krishna's enjoyment, that we're actually taking ourselves out of the position of being the controller.
Yes. There was a place that we just read, it was the last one, he says, the Purusha Bhav. Where was that? Oh, that was the Shopanishad. You can't tell the difference between the two classes. Okay. So then, because you have that element that you're dealing with the Lord's energies, but you're not seeing it in relation to Krishna because the Purusha Bhav covers it. But once that, so that's why the humility and all that is important, because then that Purusha Bhav will be given up.
And the more you bring it back to reminding yourself, catching,
yeah.
then it becomes a habit catching.
It becomes a habit catching. Yeah, and then it becomes your natural habit to always remember. That's why it's important to be in good association or good situations, because it's easier to remember what you're supposed to be doing in those situations. Right? If you're in Guru Puja, there's more of a chance you might remember the guru and have some favorable sentiments. But you could go through the whole guru puja and not even be aware of what's going on at all. You know, and just by habit, you can go up and get some flowers and offer them, offer obeisances, and walk off without bumping into anybody. But you could be thinking, distracted by something else completely. So, but it is the best situation in which you could remember the guru, right? Because of the association, everybody, guru's there, everybody else is remembering. So that makes it, does that make sense? Like that. So that's why you always put yourself in favorable conditions, in favorable association. Because there's more opportunity to cultivate that awareness of Krishna and the desire to please Krishna and serve Krishna. Yes.
I couldn't quite understand how the spiritual can not be connected to Krishna. I thought as soon as it's not, it becomes material.
No, it means spiritual is, you have a borderline. Because the spiritual means it's borderline between material and rasa. You know, in other words, there's material rasa, there's spiritual rasa. So just as material facility can be used for material rasa, and spiritual. So then the spiritual can also be used for spiritual rasa, or it can be neutral. Because as soon as it turns into you're the enjoyer, then it turns into material. Because basically the difference between spiritual and material is one's perspective. Right? It means there is superior energy and inferior energy. But even in the superior energy, you can have a mentality that's not, you know, of on the platform of prema. Right, you can still have one that's neutral. Therefore, you're appreciating it like that, but you don't necessarily, it's not foremost in the mind to see it in connection with Krishna.
And then it's only a matter of time before...
Yeah, then it's only a matter of time before it turns into the other. You know, that's why even if it's a long time, short time, it doesn't matter to us, because we're dealing with eternal time, and so everything's pretty short anyway. You know? Okay, and then the spiritual master is that if he sees he cannot actually give instructions that will benefit the disciple. Means, in other words, the what he says is very nice, but it's not specific. Does that make sense? There's a difference between, means generic discussion of the subject matter, and being able to get it specifically applied to the individual. Does that make sense? Like someone is giving the class in the temple, and everybody appreciates the class. But it's not that, and everybody in the, because everybody goes, all varieties of mentalities and backgrounds and conditioning are there. Right? But to make that teaching specifically applicable to a certain conditioning, that one spiritual master will have an ability, and another one, he won't. His will be in another area. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's why then there's the mutual testing, to see if what the person says you're able to apply. Right? If you can apply it, then that means you have a connection there. If you can't, then you stick to just the general appreciation of you know, what they speak. Does that make sense? So that then is said. He will honestly admit his inability to the disciple and direct him to approach a suitable guru.
Right.
Yeah.
What should be our criteria for choosing the guru?
Criteria for choosing the guru. Depends where you're from. Right? If you're north of the Volga, then if they smile, then that's all it takes. And he's your eternal, you know, preceptor because he smiled at me. Right.
No, because you said that, like, a suitable guru, you should choose a suitable guru. What does it mean?
Suitable. So that means you would be able to actually find a proper suit that would fit, maybe, or something like that. It means that if you wouldn't be able to get a suit on him, then that's you don't go for that person. Suitable means that according to your conditioning, that they can speak the absolute truth so you can hear it and follow it. Does that make sense? Any bona fide spiritual master is speaking the absolute truth. But the point is that this absolute truth must be applied in your life. Right? So your spiritual master is that one who, what he says, you can use it in your life. Does that make sense? It's not that suitable or bona fide means, if it works for me, he's bona fide. If it doesn't work for me, he's bogus. No, it's a matter of, is that it works for me, that's the person or persons that I associate with. If it doesn't work, then we may appreciate, formal classes and stuff like that, but we won't go for specific instruction. Does that make sense? Yeah?
And what is the role of the, Shiksha Guru? Because often we have a Diksha Guru.
What is the role?
Yeah, because...
Means after he's been suited, then he says, let's roll.
Yeah. No, because often we choose to speak in the
last. What if it's a let's bounce? So then, do you want to know what's the bounce of the bona fide guru? Or? No? This doesn't make any sense to you. See, now this is the inability to get across the point. You know what I'm saying? According to your conditioning, then what I'm saying that doesn't match. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Yeah. So that means that the spiritual master must understand your specific mentality and be able to give an instruction that you will be able to understand, be inspired by, and we will be able to use. That's suitable. So, in other words, all gurus are siksha gurus. The diksha guru is that siksha guru which connects you to the parampara through the process of pancharatrik diksha. But his position as a siksha guru remains. That's actually the position. The diksha is something to formalize that position. You know what I'm saying? So he will be the prominent of so many siksha gurus. So the siksha guru that gives you pancharatrik diksha, that's only one. But with those who give you instruction, relevant instruction, that can be many. Does that make sense? So bona fide means it's what works, or suitable means what works for you. So someone, they're able to inspire, let's say, in chanting, someone else in your service, someone else in... coping with, just the material energy, whatever it is, each one inspires you in some particular way. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not that necessarily one person does everything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can go to Tesco's, you can buy nice, so many things to eat and other things. You can't buy a car. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's not necessarily that one shop has everything. Because it doesn't have everything doesn't make it not bona fide. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Something else? Got 2 minutes left. No? Oh, okay, yes.
Are we talking about engaging someone's conditioned material nature? I'm just a little confused because it says that detecting it is necessary for the guru to carefully examine which vata, dasya, satya, vatsalya, or story of his natural great greed.
Mm-hmm.
No,
it means what he's describing here is within raganuga sadhana of the particular rasa of attraction. But the point is that principle of spiritual master instructing disciple on something that works for them, that's what I'm talking about. Right? Like that. Okay. 40 seconds.
Mm. Uh-huh.
Mm. Sorry. Losing your spot there. That means you get a 10-second question.
So we should, if you feel inspired by a person, then there should be the criterion, not seeing that the person is complete in that sense.
Means its point is everything about Krishna is complete. So if they inspire you in some area connected to Krishna, then you would see them as a Siksha Guru in that area.
Okay.
You understand? Then someone who is more complete, you know, like that, that would generally be the person you would, you know, take for the Diksha Guru.
But isn't it that we take like Shiksha from so many others anyway? So?
Yeah, that's my point. Like sometimes there are people that I like myself. There are people that I like taking prasad with. They're very inspiring to take prasad with. But there are other activities they do, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with it. You know, they really appreciate prasad. You know, you feel so comfortable with them. You don't feel anything else that you just can eat and respect the prasad and have a very comfortable time. But when it comes to other aspects, you know, sometimes their take on certain cultural things or philosophy, I wouldn't ask them at all. So that aspect of devotional service is inspiring, so that association is taken. Somebody else is very nice in kirtan, or someone else knows the philosophy nicely. Someone else has a very nice service attitude, or very nice, you know, mood of devotional, you know, humility and other things like that. So you are inspired by all these things in association. In any case, they're more advanced than you. So if you're taking instruction from them, then that becomes like a siksha guru. If not, it's just an advanced devotee that you aspire being their association. The principle is the same. Just as you increase it, then it goes from just advanced devotee into siksha guru into diksha guru.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. It's a white, curly hair.
It's like a curly, okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I've always heard. It's a white, curly hair. Right. You know, it'll stand out. You know, if it's Krishna's flax.
Right. Yeah. And how about the Kastubha gem? Is it a certain color?
It's green, and it's green. The shape of a cow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Green, the shape of a cow.
So it basically, that actually just represents, or it's the source of, or whatever is the position of it, but it's all jivas. That's why Krishna always has it on his neck. So therefore Shri is there and the Kastubha is there. So therefore his internal potency and the jivas are always with Krishna. Then Radharani has a stone around her neck. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but then those two stones are always associated. Is this supposed to happen before we end the class?
Right, kind of from the hatch and landing. In other words, you want something before you buy it, you look at it all your life. Right, that would be great. Because if you want to buy it, it's a big deal. I don't know what this is, yes. All that, but I don't understand.
Of course, you can discuss, because the idea is that what he says is correct. I just don't understand it. I thought that's what I'm doing. You said this, and I don't understand it. So please, explain. Because the whole idea is questions, that's why it's part of question. Submissive requirement. Submissive requirement, not I found it all from the same. I don't understand what was that.
That's on top of this thing. you said that there were the 4 beliefs, it wasn't the fact of all, it's a particular process. You just choose the process, it's already there, right? But you have to, you know, beg it, basically. Not for that, you need the mind. That was my understanding.
Yeah, that's the system of logic, so it doesn't go wrong. What's missing?
If it doesn't go wrong. If it goes wrong, then Krishna didn't sanction.
something was missing.
I know the process. I know about the knowledge, and I applied the process, and I didn't get the result. That's what you're saying. Yeah. And then what's failing?
Yeah. What would you say? If you say that, what can you go back and do to make sure?
Well, I think in a few practical experience, I would see that there was something was actually, you know, I didn't focus on it. I become detached.
Why sanctification? You're in an area, nobody's there. So before you reject the area, what are the things you want to do? Checks and balances?
Oh, okay, I changed my approach.
Consciousness can be wrong.
Yeah, that's
why might your consciousness be wrong?
Attachment to the self.
Attachment to the self. Why are you feeling this?
Because
thank you. Look.
I know. It's all so small.
Whoa. Whoa.